bitch please.
Oh, bitch please my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, a devil. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast here in my man cave in the Green Circle Studios. And this week, we're going Hollywood. No actors, no directors, but I'm gonna bring in somebody who will talk all about Hollywood next here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
When you need someone to listen, a lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
Kicking yourself for them cars that be bumping.
Yeah, but we need a beat that they can front to. Oh, that'll work. Be funky. You know what I'm saying?
Cross ride with the booming system.
Funky.
Cross ride drop.
All the cars out there and all the brothers.
Cross ride drop.
I like the front they ride.
Cross ride drop.
Check it out. You know it's funky, cause you heard it from hearsay. A jam that you love that don't be getting no airplay. Strictly for frontin' when you're riding around. 12 o'clock at night with your windows down. Headlights blinking cause your battery's drained. Armor roll on your tires and a big old chain. Parking outside all the hip-hop spots. Push the EQ and play connect the dots. Leaning to the side, people everywhere. The trunk full of amps, there ain't no room for a spare. Big beats bumping with the bass in back. All the sophisticated suckers got your heart attack.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to JB's Low Tech Podcast. As I said in the opening, we're going Hollywood today. And as promised, I said no actors, no producers and whatnot, but a person who can give us all the background and what's going on in Hollywood these days, and he can be heard on the KQRS Morning Show and other outlets in the Twin Cities talking about movies and Hollywood and whatnot. And I'm happy to welcome Tim Lammers. Hey, Timmy.
Hey, JB. How are you, man? Thank you so much for having me.
Not a big deal. And some people got on me for not having you on earlier, but it's like, no, I want to kind of slowly bring in the people that I really know and start off with some uncomfortable interviews, because this one should be pretty comfortable.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm glad that there are one or two people out there that hear me. Now, of course, that's not to besmirch the KQ Morning Show. I mean, they got tons of listeners. I'm just talking about people that are actually interested in me. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, there's people out there. So,
cool.
Like I said, this is going to be about Hollywood. So what started or piqued your interest in movies and Hollywood and things like that?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting, JB, because, look, I'm from the country. I grew up on a farm. I still consider myself a farm boy at heart. I live on the country still. So probably, you know, look, when I grew up, I mean, when we both grew up, I mean, we're contemporaries, you know, the options were very few. I mean, you played sports, and if you were lucky, you would go to a movie once in a while, and I'm talking just a once in a great while,
yeah.
Because you had your three channels on TV, And so, you know, lucky for me, you know, my father, who was a farmer full time, he was a cop full time. I mean, he worked on the weekends. And one of his deals on the side was being like a cop or a security guard or what have you, once in a while at the drive-in on the weekends in Buffalo, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. It was a Cinebuff drive-in.
Right.
And, you know, once in a while we would go with him, you know, if he had one of those things, and it would be the dusk till dawn deal, you know.
Oh, okay.
So you got to see these low-rent B-movies like Frogs and maybe higher-end stuff like the Abominable Dr. Fibes with Vincent Price. you know, so,
right.
You know, for a farm kid that didn't go to movies that often, that obviously captured my fascination. And so, you know, look, even growing up still, I mean, you know, I had the Buffalo Theater downtown, you know, which I'd live, you know, not too far from. And, you know, I take dates there or whatever. And then I guess the big breakthrough was because I was fascinated with movies. I love movies, you know, as a little kid, because it was a real treat going back then because you didn't go out that often. Once the VCR came around,
mm-hmm.
Which for me was, I was probably 17, 18 years old when my mom and dad bought that top-loading VCR.
Right. The Beta.
And I could rent movies,
right.
You know, for $6, $7, $8 a time. You know, it was an outrageous amount of money. But still, it was so cool being able to see any movie I wanted to, at least what the store had. So it just kind of took off from there. So, you know, it's not like today where kids can access anything they want at any time through
right.
streaming or whatever and become fascinated that way. It was just probably the inaccessibility to that really, I guess, captured the fascination. Because, you know, also back then, too, I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, I got movies like Star Wars and Superman, the movie, and stuff like that, and the Disney, you know, musicals and, you know, the stuff in theaters, which would come back for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times on second, third, fourth, and fifth runs, you know, Dumbo, you know, movies like that, Sound of Music. So, yeah, it was, again, it was like kind of an unattainable thing to me, and I think maybe that's why I learned to appreciate them so much.
Well, I'm still trying to get this picture out of my head that your dad was a cop and a farmer. I'm trying
yeah.
to figure out how that works.
Well, work days on the farm and work nights as a cop.
Okay.
You know, it was 6 days on, 3 days off, you know. You know, we weren't like full, you know, 80 acres, but, you know, he kept himself busy. I mean, it's not like we were huge dairy farmers or anything
right.
like that, but we had, you know, beef cattle and pigs and chickens around the farm. And yeah, pretty decent sized farm. So, you know, he grew up as a farmer and, you know, he loved that. And I maintain to this day, I mean, we lost him a few years ago. You know, I think that ability to blow off steam or, you know, unwind or whatever,
mm-hmm.
getting outside and doing the work out there probably helped him to be around as long as he was, because he was 87 years old when
okay.
he passed away.
Yeah.
You know, because cops, obviously,
right.
it's a very strenuous, stressful position, and a lot of guys, you know, probably keep it bottled up, and I think Dad had an opportunity to blow it off. So being a farmer, you know, it was by choice. And here's the other thing, JB. When you got 6 kids, you got to pay the bill.
That's
you know?
True.
And, you know, so mom worked too, but, you know, you have a farm, you got a lot of responsibility. So, yeah, part of it, I think, was by choice, part of it by necessity. But I really think that, you know, he really did love doing farming too. So, yeah, you know, unlucky for me, I was just talking about this the other day, you know, the steers get out at midnight. Guess who gets up and has to come chase them down? I wasn't alone.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, so you had plenty of those 3 or 4 in the morning deals where you had to get up because they got out, you know, whatever.
Right. No, I totally understand about your dad making money for six kids. I grew up in a house of nine kids with my parents, so I totally get that. So there was a video that was released this week, and you put it out yourself, of a young Tim Lammers talking to Selma Hayek. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was no beard, which really threw me off, and tons of hair. And glasses.
You forgot the weight. See, I tell everybody I put on my Raging Bull weight, you know, because De Niro packed on 50 pounds to play Jake LaMotta. And De Niro took those 50 pounds off. I didn't. maybe more than that, actually, full disclosure. But, yeah. Well, thank you. Look, I mean, that was 25 years ago. And you know, it's kind of fun to revisit that stuff once in a while. And the reason I did it was because The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard is out this week. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable how Selma Hayek has, she's just gotten more beautiful.
She's
I'm 56 and she's just a couple years younger than me. So, you know, yeah, I look the age. I look the part, baby. She still looks exactly the same. I think more beautiful than she did. But, you know, at that point, I mean, I was just, I've been in the business for about 30 years. So that was about 5 years in. And great entertainment anchor in town, Bill Carlson. I interned with him starting in 1992. So really, I mean, he was my mentor in the business. And lucky for me, I mean, there would be a fair number of folks that would come into town. And I could sit and watch the guy do interviews. And I was just amazed that it wasn't really interviewing so much as it was conversation, you know? So, you know, he told me all the time, you know, just go in with three questions and listen.
Yes.
Because a lot of times your great questions will come out of their answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was really that sort of demeanor that, you know, going in cool and calm, that really, you know, stuck with me. And then obviously I logged a great number of his tapes when he'd come back, because he'd go on junkets every weekend to New York and LA and, you know, talk with thousands of stars over his career. So, you know, it was pretty amazing to me. But again, it's kind of like a simple deal. I mean, you know, just like you and I are talking, JB, you listen and, you know, he's having fun,
right?
You know, and I was just blessed. And that's the other thing too. You know, you're just lucky to be in that position in the first place too. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you know, her answer was particularly pointed about Hollywood wasn't exactly the place people thought it was. You know, because of it's actually, she's talking about Hollywood, you know, not Beverly Hills. You know, so yeah, that was a lot of fun. So once in a while, it's fun to revisit things. And then on top of that deal, I posted it on Facebook. I put a picture of me then and a picture of me now next to each other. One of my buddies from Brown Institute, he was kind enough to say, the only thing I can see that's different is you're not wearing glasses. Well, yeah, you pal look the same, but time has gotten to me, man.
Well, here's one thing, going back to your comments about interviewing. I've had three different people in the last, I'd say, month ask me, do I come in with this gigantic list of questions? And I, are these questions preset? Or, you know, do I talk to the guests before to get the questions? And it's like, no. Mm-hmm. I say, I have maybe two or three questions, and I say, I just listen. And then
absolutely.
And like you said, and then the questions just pop in your head, and then I write them down as we go to continue. But it's like, so I don't forget them. But no.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at that time with that video I was doing with Selma, I had a board you could see.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Basically, it's just a couple things, and you know, by this time, it all depends on how much time you have too. I mean, you know, for that, that was like a 6-minute deal. So, right. You know, and when I get into those 6-minute situations now, which I still do, actually, I did a 3-minute interview with Liam Neeson last week. So, you know, you pretty much have the questions written in your head, you know, mm-hmm. You don't have them written down. But, you know, just you get the general idea of what you want to talk about and just let it go. And, you know, the nice part about what you and I are doing, JB, is that there isn't somebody standing behind, like with Selma Hayek, there's somebody standing behind her, you know, going 3 with their fingers, 2, right. And then wrap it up, you know. So you don't have any of those distractions either. But, you know, by and large, I mean, when you're there and you have that opportunity, you just kind of remain focused on, you know, whoever you're talking with, and you just let it go from there.
Yeah, I remember those prompts when I used to do radio at KQ, and we'd be interviewing somebody, and you hear the beep, and you'd be like, oh, this is over. Okay.
Yeah, I know, and it always goes too fast, doesn't
it? Yeah, or the other thing is we're promised 10 minutes. By the time they get to us, we got 7 because the Hun Yuck before us took extra time and didn't honor, you know, the unspoken code and went over his or her time, and it shorts the next person. So,
well, you know what? And I still, to this day, I rarely have an interview start on time, you know,
right.
You know, a lot of them now are over Zoom and everything, but you know, what you do is you get into this waiting room and all that stuff. And generally, I mean, it's rare when they say 2:00, then it's going to start at 2:00, you know? Yeah. It's too bad with radio, especially. Yeah. Because then all of a sudden you're right. Your 10 minute interview shrinks.
Right.
And they're giving you the beep at 5. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I heard many a frustrated Tom in those situations, because he was just get going, and he hears the beep, and it's like, oh, okay. But
I know. And the thing is that the people that, you know, obviously because he's so damn good at interviewing, you know, the people that he's talking to actually enjoy what they're, you know, who they're talking with, but, you know, they're kind of being tugged out of there, you know. That sucks.
Right. No, and oddly enough, we have those people come back later, and when they're not on a cycle or car wash or junket or whatever it's called.
Yeah, exactly.
And do their and just give us more time and whatnot. So I promised the people this would be about Hollywood. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about, you know, we went through this whole year and a half of the pandemic and racial tensions and whatnot. What effect did that have on the movie viewing industry?
Well, you know, it's interesting because streaming, I won't say it was in its infancy, but certainly, you know, Netflix changed that whole game a few years ago. But, you know, just in the last few years, you got Disney Plus, HBO Max came out. There was this thing that was called Quibi that you could watch on your phone. That came and went during the pandemic, oddly enough. But, you know, there were all these offerings where, you know, it was like a redundancy for the studios. It was a plan B that they didn't know that they had necessarily. I mean, generally the deal with movies is that they come out in theaters and you get 90 days to, it's like a 90-day window. So the theater owners can show the movies in theaters and get as many people in as possible because their lives depend on concessions, more or less. They don't make a lot of money with the actual movies. So all of a sudden you have this product sitting there bottled up and nowhere to go. The studios have to do something. So what they did was, you know, they started streamlining the process and going straight to video on demand, or what they called premium video on demand. So all of a sudden you have these films that would have been in theaters appearing online and for video that you can rent for 48 hours for $20. And you're thinking, geez, that $20, that's a stiff fee. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I looked at it from a couple different standpoints. Well, 3. Number one, I never paid for that because I'm a critic. And, you know, I wouldn't have anyway. I would have gone to the screening. But 2, I mean, they felt it was a fair price because, look, if you're going to go with another person, you're at least going to spend $20 to get into the door. Mm-hmm. So the studios, yeah, they lost money, but at least they were getting that product out there. Now, how they actually dealt with talent, that was getting part of, you know, their deals were structured as such where they get part of the gross of the film, et cetera. The big stars we're talking right. about, the Tom Cruises, the Tom Hanks, you know, all those folks. So, you know, they were, I guess you could say, half up and running, but at least they were getting their stuff out there. The ones, obviously, that took the biggest hit were the theaters, because right. all of a sudden, boom, their doors are closed, and they're struggling, and there was really no financial aid coming through for them, you know, not right away. Eventually, there was. You know, so that was really a hard deal for them. And so you had AMC, you know, Regal Cinemas. AMC, I think, is like the second biggest one. Might be the biggest in the U.S., Regal worldwide. But, you know, all of a sudden you have a business that just isn't operating, and a massive business with tons of employees that they have to lay off. So, you know, at least some of the employees were getting paid, or hopefully most of them, or all of them, with unemployment. But still, you have these giant buildings sitting there. You still have maintenance and everything like that. You still got to keep the lights on. So some of them were, like AMC, teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. Yeah. And luckily, you know, they secured the cash where they could stay open.
Right.
Some other ones, unfortunately for us in the Twin Cities, including the Uptown, that's in limbo. I don't know if another ownership group is going to take it over, but right now that's not reopening. You have the Edina Theater, which I screen many movies at, and a few at Uptown. Not so many in Uptown as, you know, over at the Lagoon, yes. Not in the Uptown Theater, which is a beautiful theater, by the way, after it got remodeled. That shut down as well. And then you had second run theaters, you know, the $1-$2 movie houses,
right?
That you would find in small towns. And there's a friend of mine that I got to know on Facebook, actually, who owns a theater in Malacca, a second run theater, which, you know, when you're in a little more remote area and it's a community like Malacca, where it's, you know, a nice tight knit community where people can, you know, congregate at the movies, you know, that went away. So, you know, it hit some people harder than others, but I think by and large, everybody took a big hit.
Yeah, it was it was an odd dichotomy of, I would go to get groceries, and there was a movie theater right next to the grocery store in Plymouth. And
and you're talking the Plymouth 15, probably the Plymouth Grand, I would
right. say. Yeah. And it would be, the lot would be completely empty. But I would go into Cub Foods, and that place would be completely full. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because we all still needed to eat, and we wanted our groceries and other things and whatnot. But, you know, but we couldn't go into movie theaters or sporting events. And that was, you know, that was the other strange thing. You knew sporting events were still happening, and you could watch them on TV. But, you know, seeing the empty, you know, stadiums and rinks and fields, it was very odd. But to always look at that parking lot of that movie theater and see nothing there just was a drastic reminder of what we were going through.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the other thing. I mean, movie going is a huge, I don't know, I don't want to call it a pastime. You know, hopefully there's a vibrant future in it. But, you know, and obviously baseball is a pastime,
right.
And, you know, in the sense of the word. But, you know, yeah, look, I mean, there was a reason that the box office numbers were reported on the national news every weekend, you know. It was something that there was a commonality there with people, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's like sports. I mean, it's one of those all American or worldwide activities, you know, people engage in every single weekend, especially. So, yeah, it is weird. I think that, you know, and think that I don't know, there was just this whole idea of people, when they did make it available to people, and probably in the late summer and fall, depending on the country, part of the country that you were living in, you know, there was, I think there's still this hesitancy to go into a theater. But when we were talking last year, last summer especially, the one thing that a lot of places, they made adjustments, they basically painted the sides of their buildings, you know, a big rectangular square, a white square, like a screen, and they opened up drive-in.
Yep.
And, you know, again, we opened this conversation about how wonderful it was going to those drive-ins when I was a kid, you know, and something that really, prior to last summer, a lot of people didn't experience, because there's maybe three or four drive-ins left in Minnesota. There's one in Litchfield, actually, that I go to. I try to get to at least once or twice a year. So actually last year, our first movie over the summer was in Litchfield in the drive-in, Beverly Hills Cop, and 48 Hours was a double feature.
Right.
So it was cool because my son and I are such huge Eddie fans that it's like, you know what, you got to see Beverly Hills Cop on the big screen, because obviously that was out a long time before he was born. You know, so that was cool, but, you know, that gave the theaters an opportunity to, a lifeline maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money people made from that sort of thing. But I know there were chains that did that. And I think Mann, that owns the Plymouth, I think that they did that. But, you know, quite a few drive-ins, and then, of course, the drive-ins in, I think maybe there's one in the Twin Cities area now. You know, that it was a big deal for them all of a sudden, you know, for people to do that. So, I think that what it did, excuse me, JB, I think that it kept the spirit of movie going, excuse me, alive a bit,
right.
You know, kept that excitement alive a bit for moviegoers by doing that. And the thing is, you know, out my way too, St. Michael, for example, they did the same thing. And not only that, they used to have concerts inside of their buildings. They call it the music room. They basically made one of their theaters a concert venue. They had a stage outside, and it was so successful that they built a stage, a much bigger one with a big overhang and a pretty sophisticated setup, on the side of their building now, a nice grassy area where they have outdoor concerts all summer. So I guess, you know, for some theaters, it was really a matter of adapting, right? You know, it was just like any business, really. It's unfortunate, though, because this thing, you know, who knew how long? And I don't want to talk about it like the past tense, because, you know, obviously, there's variants, et cetera,
right.
But, you know, nobody knew how long this thing was going to take hold and keep a hold. I think there was a lot of hope that, you know, when it started in the spring of 2020, that, oh, okay, you know, we'll be out of this thing by, you know, the end of the summer, you know. But then it became quite apparent, as, you know, from my standpoint in my business, that they keep moving the release dates and moving them and moving them and moving them. That, I don't know if you call it good foresight or not, because they just knew that, It just, you know, some parts of the country are better, but, you know, as far as this part that's open, this isn't. New York and L.A., they're shut down. And when New York and L.A. are shut down, your two largest movie-going markets, you know, you're looking at a long time before this thing gets back to normal.
Yeah, I mean, it was just the whole time and whatnot of the heavy part of the pandemic was just the interesting, I don't know and what word to use to describe it, but it was just interesting to see how this industry survived and this industry was in trouble, or like the home screen projection industry off.
The word I think of immediately, and probably a lot of people wouldn't, was when you're thinking about the pandemic, Twilight Zone. Two words. Twilight. I guess I'm always thinking in movie and TV.
Right.
But Yeah, you're right. You know, it's funny because obviously when you're on Facebook and stuff, it's like, hey, look at us. You know, we're showing this in our backyard tonight and all that. And oddly enough, JB, that's something my wife and I always wanted to do, my wife especially. So it wasn't a big surprise when she found, you know, a home movie projector under the tree last Christmas. So we're hoping at some point, you know, to get out and put up some sort of screen or whatever, you know, once it's starting to cool down. Oh, thank God. But it hasn't been quite ideal with the 100-degree weather right. The last few weeks. But, yeah. We, you know, so we're really looking forward to that. And, yeah, I mean, it's a good people. It basically, by doing that, it provided to people the option that they just didn't have in those first few months, especially, you know, just getting together with people and having fun, you know, sitting outside together, whether they're sitting outside or sitting together and watching a movie. I mean, I think a lot of people miss that, especially with their friends, you know. So, yeah, that's I'm glad that you pointed that out with the home theater systems or the home projection stuff, because that, I'm sure, really was huge for the industry in the last year.
Well, Tim, I'm going to take a short break here and then come back, and we can talk about what's going to be hot in the theaters, since we just talked about what's been hot outside the theater, but what's going to be hot in the theaters, and then also talk about how Hollywood is handling the business of Hollywood. So if you don't mind, I'll take a commercial break and come back and we'll start again.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, and that was Tim Lammers, and we'll be right back after this short message here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Well, folks, the season is finally here. What season? Baseball and softball season, of course. Are you ready? What about you players out there? Are you ready? Is your equipment ready? What about that glove you've been using? What about that uniform you've been wearing year after year? Well, I tell you what, if it needs to be repaired, bring it to JB's Glove Repair. He'll have you together in no time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. With over 30 plus years of experience, he'll have you ready by game time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. I'm speaking with today's guest, Tim Lammers. Like I said earlier, we were going to talk about everything Hollywood, and now we can get into what's hot in the theaters.
Sure. Well, now, first of all, your sponsor here is a fellow named Mike Bryan, am I correct?
That's one, and then the other one is called JB'sGloveRepair.com.
There you go. Well, I have to just give a quick shout out to Michael Bryant.
Right.
I mean, obviously he's been a long time sponsor of all the places I appear, so I very much appreciate Mike's support over all these years, and I'm glad that he's on board with you as well.
Well, believe me, nobody was happier when he reached out to me and made that offer than me. So kind of made me feel a little bit more legit when he did that. I always appreciate Mike's help and Mike's kindness and friendship over the years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for supporting me and supporting JB, man, because we're having this conversation today. I love that.
Right. So, as I was stating, what's going to be hot or new in the movie theaters and streaming and other places for our consumption?
Well, you know, I mean, the great part about it is while the numbers are, you know, look, for a normal time, they would be considered dismal. But for the pandemic, when you get movies like A Quiet Place 2, which is still hot, you have The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. You know, and they make $20 million in a weekend, that's a great sign. Now, you know, A Quiet Place 2, you know, Memorial Day weekend, which is obviously an extended weekend, but when they pull in more than $50 million, I mean, that's a great sign that the industry is coming back. It also tells me, too, though, that it's the scary stuff, it's the high-intensity stuff that is going to get people in the theaters. You know, people, I personally, that's one thing I missed during the pandemic and the theater shutdown is that feeling you get with a crowd. You can really feel the atmosphere, especially that first Quiet Place. I remember the tension that you felt. So I think people miss that, and that collective jumping and screaming and all that, and laughing, you know, the nervous laughter, whatever. So that's a good sign. But yeah, obviously you're not going to get that with your romantic drama, you know.
Right.
So the theater industry, the movie going industry has kind of been like an up and down sort of thing, mostly up again since, you know, you got that Quiet Place. Actually, you know when it started, JB, was with Godzilla versus Kong, and then you know you get lulls in between, but then you have what's the other one that came? Oh, Mortal Kombat. So it kind of tells me that there's an appetite for that sort of movie in the theater. So, you know, fortunately, it's been a hot summer inside, you know, the theater from again pandemic standards. You know, with those types of movies. And I think people are going to get that again this weekend, or if, you know, I guess, you know, this week, you know, once they get out there and they see The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Again, that's the sort of movie where you got to, you know, marquee people like Ryan Reynolds, you know, obviously huge hit with Deadpool, Sam Jackson, always entertaining, Salma Hayek, who we were talking about recently, you know, that was a surprising hit 4 years ago. Actually, that first Hitman's Bodyguard came out 4 years ago, and this is, you know, the sequel. Finally, it was delayed a year because of the pandemic. So, you know, I think it's going to be movies like that are going to get people back into the theater this summer. Now, I can't talk about it yet because there's a review embargo and all that sort of stuff, and I actually did watch it at home. With a screening link, but Black Widow, you know, the new Marvel movie.
Right.
And these are the sorts of movies that, you know, generally when they're in the theaters, we're talking about anywhere from 150 million to 200 million plus, depending if you're an Avengers movie, you know, when they come out, I mean, it's like everybody is in the theater to see this thing. So with any luck, that's going to be the sort of movie that's going to get people back in the theater. And you know, every week is a blessing, you know, every week where we don't have any sort of new outbreak or whatever, or we see cases going down, is giving people more and more confidence, you know, to get out there and get into wherever they want, you know, whether they want to go eat or something or go to a Twins game or whatever. You know, by the time July 9th comes around, hopefully we're going to see an even bigger audience with that. So I think that's the sort of movie that those sorts of movies, the action movies, the summer popcorn movies, the sort of movies that would rule the box office anyway, but it's really a blessing to have those sorts of movies now, because I think that's really going to be healthy for the movie industry here, you know, in the next few months.
Well, it's interesting because you said the first movies that brought it back were ones to scare us, which is like, for me, it's like, haven't we been through enough?
It's kind of counterproductive, isn't it?
Haven't we been through enough
but,
being
you know,
scared?
That's the whole thing. You know, that's the whole thing, though, JB. I mean, you could go into the theater and you could get scared out of your wits, But then it was over, and you can walk out laughing, and it's only a movie. It's only a movie. I mean, right. It wasn't a nightmare that you lit. Well, maybe for some people. I tell you what, man, there's a scene at the beginning of The Conjuring, an exorcism scene that, yeah, I can see that one producing nightmares. But by and large, you don't walk away with stuff hanging with you for months or years. I mean, you just can enjoy it. And that's right. It seems weird that we want to go see things that scare us, but again, it's just a movie. It's just fictional, so we can enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you said the latest Marvel release, Black mm-hmm. Widow, which my younger brother, he's probably somewhere salivating and geeking out about it. He's all in. He grew up a comic book kid. We're 4 years apart. But somehow, he grew up a comic book kid, and I was more of a run up and down in the alleys and fields playing sports. But
sounds like me and my brothers. I was the one that was inside watching the movie. I played baseball and stuff too, though, in the summer. But yeah.
But he's the one who gets all the storylines and whatnot. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm totally lost by that. So I miss a good action comedy or a good romance comedy. Or is there anything like that coming soon? Or,
well, the thing is, there are some movies that mix that sort of thing, and I think right now your best choice for the action comedy is something like The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Okay.
That to me is your best bet as far as that thing is concerned. I don't see anything that huge on the schedule coming out. Because we're also talking about the Fast and Furious 9 coming out in theaters.
Yeah.
F9 is what they call it,
right.
And that's next week. And then more horror movies. We got the Forever Purge on July 2nd and then Black Widow. So, the thing is about these sorts of movies is too, like I said, the window has shrunk considerably,
right?
So when theaters, they weren't happy, believe me, when Universal, they were the first ones to put their stuff directly to streaming, and that really ticked off a lot of because they're partners. Whether they want to admit it or not, the studios are partners with theaters. They need theaters to survive. They just happen to have this great option called streaming. So, what's happening is that you do have great movies, like a movie called Dream Horse that came out a few weeks ago, a real life story about this, how this community in, a Welsh, a village in Wales that raised this horse that actually, went on and made a run for greatness, even though they were going up against the elites. This is a bunch of people kicking in 10 bucks a week, in order to raise this horse. It was in theaters. It probably is still in theaters, but it comes to video 17 days after the release of the film in theaters. So that is a nice sort of, having that window shortened, that helps a lot. So yes, you're going to see movies with, a different sort of theme come out apart from action. In the Heights, another one. That is a wonderful musical, okay? But Warner Brothers has this deal with HBO Max where it premieres the same day.
Oh.
So people have the option to see it in theaters if they want and get the full experience, or they can see it, if they subscribe to HBO Max, which is $15 a month or, a lot less if you get it with commercials, kind of Hulu's model and a few others. Those movies are out there. I'm not saying that it's just going to be action and horror this summer. It's just that they're not going to get as much attention, obviously. But they're available. They're widely available and a lot quicker than, most movies most of the time.
When you need someone to listen, a lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
J.B.
is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
I am Negro, Black, African-American.
Black.
Django.
J.B.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know I
J.B.
Our great Negro
sex machine.